Welcome to Swim News with Kevin Clark. I am Kevin Clark. Lindsay Jones. It's round one recap. What's going on, buddy?
We made it. Round one. Did we?
31 players were drafted, not 32, because the Dolphins tried to give a percentage of their team to Tom Brady. Interesting night. It's what we thought, because there were not, as something we've hammered home ad nauseum, because there were not a lot of first round grades around the league, that we knew there'd be some chaos. We knew there'd be, you know, we did a bold predictions post and I said Bijan Robinson was going to go top 10 because there was just going to be a team that said, screw it, we don't love these guys, let's just ride with these guys. I did not know that Detroit was going to go with Gibbs and make it two running backs in the first half of the first round. That was shocking to me. We can get to that. What we're going to do here is quick and easy, 30 minutes of who helped themselves, who didn't.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I want to start, Lindsay, this is an easy one, with the Philadelphia Eagles, who, by the way, made the Super Bowl last year. I want to read you a Zach Berman tweet. We're going to do a little reading. The Eagles traded Carson Wentz to Indy in a deal that included the number 16 pick in 2022. They traded that pick to New Orleans in a deal that included a first-round pick swap and a 2023 first-round pick, and more, says Zach Berman. The pick swap turned into A.J. Brown. The 23 first-rounder turned into Jalen Carter. Howie Roseman is good at this. Howie Roseman understands value. And I think a lot of times, Lindsay, we sit around and we talk about great GMs, and the easiest thing for a GM to do is consistently hit doubles with value just over and over again. The board, we talked about this the other day with the Chargers, where it's like, oh, the board tends to fall to them. Well, the board tends to fall to them, to teams like the Eagles, because they don't overthink it, because the picks come to them and they say, ah, this makes sense. And Howie Roseman was on the Kelce Brothers podcast a couple weeks ago talking about value. And the one thing is, he operates on two different planes, because he's always thinking about value, but on the other hand, he's never overthinking it. So he's always overthinking it and never overthinking it at the same time. Lindsay, what'd you think about this Eagles draft? Nolan Smith, Jalen Carter, two Georgia guys from a defense that, listen, like Kirby Smart, and I've said it a million times, he recruits a high school all-star team on defense, and then he unleashes those guys into the NFL. And there was a couple of recruiting guys, Bud Elliott and Cooper Behagna, who were talking about this last night, about how, like, five-star recruits, they're going to the NFL at a much higher clip than they used to. Recruiting's become much more efficient, all that stuff. And I think a lot of that is because guys like Kirby and Nick, they just get these guys, teach them how to play football for 3 years, and then they come out as polished products. And Philadelphia is not overthinking it, and they've now gotten, what, five of those guys in the last 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a revolutionary scouting tactic to just find the best team and the best players in college football and focus your recruit or your evaluation there. I mean, other teams should probably try this. Did other teams watch college football? I mean, I'm not a big, huge college football fan, but I knew those guys in Georgia were really good.
Do you remember when the Raiders just drafted from the college football playoff, and they just drafted a bunch of Clemson guys and Alabama guys, and they were like, yeah, that's good. They tried that, but it was a little less successful and a little different.
Yeah, but I like this, that this was on my list too of teams that helped themselves, because like you said, value. I also think when you look at the state of the Eagles roster, a very good roster. That's why they won the NFC. That's why they nearly won the Super Bowl, but an aging roster. They've got a really big need here in the next couple of years to continue building around, you know, building a team around Jalen Hurts. Now that your quarterback is expensive, and to do that, you need to have you know, really good young players, guys that are on their rookie contracts. And, you know, the Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, that era is just about over. Not completely over, but now you can see what the future looks like for Philadelphia on defense. That front seven, you know, you don't have to be very imaginative to think about, what are Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis going to look like together? I'm going to pop on that 2021 Georgia team, and it looks pretty damn good.
Not just that, but they know how to find roles for guys. There's a reason Hassan Reddick was able. I mean, he did not have as much of a market as he should have. The Eagles paid fair value for him, and then the Eagles knew what to do with him. And Nolan Smith, another undersized guy who they're going to figure out how to use athleticism. That's what they do. The one thing about that, I think it was Jason Kelce himself who said this, or maybe it was the question asker on a pod a couple weeks ago. I think the Eagles core, that sort of core four, the Kelce, Fletcher Cox, Lane Johnson, you're looking at unprecedented levels of guys who've been with the same team for over a decade, right? In that core. And then they're coming back for 1 year at a time. Fletcher Cox was off the roster for a couple weeks there last summer. Jason Kelce was on the fence about coming back this year. It just seems to me like when you're coming back for 1 year increments that core at some point is going to work its way out. Replenishing that is so vital, and they understand how to do that. The other part of this, and this is something we're going to hit on a bunch probably throughout this podcast once he is, if I'm an NFC team right now, I'm accelerating whatever timeline you have, even if you're already the best team in the NFC, because the NFC is a wasteland. It is a wasteland. And the AFC just got Aaron Rodgers. They have unbelievable. I mean, for God's sake,
Lamar Jackson,
the Texans, Lamar Jackson, even the Texans got better yesterday. Like it is, the Colts just got Anthony Richardson. Like at the end, if I'm an NFC team right now, I'm reshuffling the deck chairs to make sure that I'm just getting better this year, because anything can happen. And so if I'm the Eagles, you kind of want to go all in a little bit. And this isn't going all in, just using the draft capital they have. But you don't want to take projects right now, because the timeline is now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I want to hit on Jalen Carter for just a second and the move that they made. They moved up one spot. They gave up a fourth rounder. It was a little odd to me that Chicago would just kind of make that switch right there. I mean, I guess they just really didn't want Jalen Carter. They really wanted an offensive tackle. They really believed that that's what they needed to put around Justin Fields, which I understand that, but giving up a fourth rounder to get Jalen Carter, who is, you know, we talked about this on our podcast we recorded Monday that never aired. So you'll just have to take our word for it. But you know, a guy who,
what a pod that was,
so good. Are there Pulitzers for pods? Can we still submit it? Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at a guy who is, you know, just from a pure football perspective, might be the best player in this entire class. You know, the upside from a football perspective is just huge. And I like this fit. I like where he was going. I like the infrastructure that Philadelphia has here. I like the defensive line room that he's walking into. I like that he's going to get to be around, one, guys that he already does know and have some familiarity with, but guys like we mentioned, Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and these really respected veterans in a very stable organization that hopefully will be able to maximize this guy's career from an athletic standpoint, from a work ethic standpoint, and then from a maturity standpoint in the areas that he needs to grow up.
Couple things. Number one, winning organizations, Eagles being one of them, have a privilege that other teams don't, because they get to insert guys like Jalen Carter who do have question marks and say, you're in a winning environment and you're going to look like a weirdo if you don't row in the same direction as everybody else, okay? It is really easy to be a shithead in a bad locker room. This is a universal point. I'm peeling back from Jalen Carter here, because I remember somebody was telling me a couple of years ago, there was a player who was traded midseason and it didn't really make any sense why they kind of dumped the player. And I was talking to another GM, not the GM in question here, who made the trade. And they were saying, listen, that player can't be in a losing locker room. Can't be in a losing locker room. He will tank the entire thing. People will lose their jobs. He can't be in a losing locker room. Those players exist. And I don't know anything. Jalen Carter obviously won a hell of a lot. I'm just saying that being a winning locker room versus a losing locker room, you can take chance in that winning locker room. There's going to be veterans there. We already talked about the guys who have been there for forever, who are going to teach them how, like, you know, Jason Kelsey's talked a lot about how if a guy's quiet, he wants to talk to him. Like, who's better at bringing those guys along than those Eagles veterans right now? Fletcher Cox, those guys, even Darius Slay, who's older, who hasn't been the whole time, but he's an older guy. Like, there are guys in the defensive end who can show what it is to win and to be in that locker room. So I think that they can take chances that other teams can't. I would put the Chiefs in that bucket as well. They can take chances. We've seen that over the past, and that everyone just kind of fits right in. So I love it. I think it's, I think that they help themselves the most. The other team I want to put, we're talking about NFC acceleration here. Talk about the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they're really building something. I saw some Seahawks fans upset they didn't have a defensive lineman after the first round. Fine. But Witherspoon, you all of a sudden on the other side of Tariq Woolen, you're building the Legion of Boom 2. Our colleague Stephen Ruiz had a 2 Legion 2 Boom on Twitter last night, which I think was probably accurate. And then to get JSN from Ohio State, it just seems to me like they said, who can help us right now? And who, listen, these guys are both going to develop. Pete Carroll said he's never seen anybody like Witherspoon, which is probably true when you consider the background, the athleticism. I think he only had one Power 5 offer and was able to develop like that. It just seemed to me to be almost like a little bit of the polar opposite of the Lions, which is the Seahawks thought, okay, we can win right now if we just complete the process. And it felt to me like the Lions took luxury picks when they didn't have the, they didn't really, I don't know, have the platform to take those luxury picks, Lindsay.
Yeah, I mean, I want to go back to the Seahawks for a second. And, you know, when you're describing all of those things that you were saying about Witherspoon and, you know, no Power 5 offers or one Power 5 offer in developing, I mean, that is a classic Pete Carroll guy. You know, we wondered a year ago how long this kind of reset, the post-Russell Wilson reset might take. It was immediate. We know who the Seahawks are through and through. I mean, their DNA is so strong. Like, it is so identifiable who they are, how they want to play, what type of players they want. Pete Carroll was out there dropping his draft hints on Twitter throughout the day on Thursday and, you know, trying to figure out exactly what Love is Blind had to do with this. And I'm not sure. I'm still not entirely sure what Love is Blind had to do with Devon Witherspoon other than... which I'm looking forward to, but it very much felt like we know who we are. We know that we're getting better, you know, that they should be one of the best teams in the NFC. And Geno Smith, huge winner, huge, huge winner, because, you know, they didn't do anything crazy to draft another quarterback. And instead they got him a very, very good wide receiver. So Seattle is one of my favorite teams. And I can't wait to see what they do throughout the rest of the draft, because like you said, defensive line, edge rusher, still some really big needs. And I think Seattle is very well positioned. They have a lot of capital to, you know, continue adding to the next version of Pete Carroll's defense.
181 pounds for Witherspoon. I love him. I think that he's the type of guy, when you have a high pick in the draft and you're not picking a quarterback, I think you pick a special athlete. And that doesn't always mean I love, you know, defensive ends who can jump and run quick and all that stuff. But it could also just mean you're just a particular, you're one of one. You're a unicorn in the athletic world. I mean, like, you know, Danny Kelly talks about the planet theory, which is that there's just not a lot of people on the planet who operate like that. And by the way, that's one of the rationales for why the Colts took Anthony Richardson, was there's just not a lot of guys who can do what he can do. And so Witherspoon, I like it. Lions, I just want to express my disappointment here, because I love the Lions and it comes from a place of love. I love Dan Campbell. Brad Holmes, I think, is really smart, really thought out, really, really guy who thinks everything out. And take a running back and an off-ball linebacker so early. I don't care if you do it. And I love Jack Campbell. He was one of my favorite athletes in this draft. But I think I saw that they combined were picked 44 spots earlier than they should be in relation to sort of consensus mocks. And I know the consensus mocks can be misleading and all that stuff. But it does show they could have at least traded back, gotten some more capital, whatever. I don't know. I just feel like they had such an opportunity, and I have a bad taste in my mouth coming out of this. And I understand what you're trying to do. I understand the culture you're trying to build. I understand you want to pivot a little bit and get even more tough than you were and all of that stuff. I get that. You want to run the ball. You know your identity. You want to double down on your identity. Understand that. Just think there were better ways to do it.
Yeah. I mean, when they initially made that trade with Arizona, when Arizona moved up to six, they moved up a couple spots so they could take their offensive tackle. I immediately was like, ooh, I really like this for Detroit. Like, they didn't have to give up that much. They got another second. They got a high second round pick. I think they got 34 in that deal. And I was like, I really like this. And then all of a sudden, it's just kind of like the deflation of going, wait, what? Because, you know,
yep.
Look, you and I are not our sites like draft nicks, right? In terms of like heavily scouting the tools and stuff. We leave that to Danny Kelly and Ben Solak. But I think what you and I like to study is team building philosophies and value. And what do these moves tell us about the direction of individual teams and the trends in the league as a whole? And this one, it just raised so many questions about exactly what the Lions' vision is, where they're going, what type of roster they want to build. And like you said, if they could have, you know, maybe gotten that value elsewhere. Did you, I want to say before we move off Lions, did you see the video of their draft room? The clip?
I did.
What, I mean, they believe that they know something that we do not know, because the way that they celebrated Gibbs pick.
I don't know if it was that or they're just.
Are they faking it?
Trying to sell it a little bit. Sell it to the fan base.
I guess.
It was a reaction. Like, it was, is Gibbs such a special player that he's going to like, I think they were playing to the cameras. I think they were playing to the cameras a little bit.
I mean, usually you only see that type of reaction when a team pulls off like a major trade, or they get a guy that they really didn't think was going to be there, a guy who had slid a little bit, or they jumped ahead of another team.
Didn't they do this for Sewell? I think that they freaked out for Sewell too. I think that they're just freak out.
The underrated part of it. Make sure you go watch this. Go find that clip. Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic tweeted it out. I think Dan Campbell's like doesn't have a seat in the draft room. He just like fits on the coffee cart, which very much tracks. But they're not. But now I, you know, just to get serious about the Lions for another minute, they're picking at 34. Very early now in the second round, and they're now the team that I'm watching to go, what the hell are they going to do? Because still have a lot of needs. They need a lot of help on defense. Obviously some big quarterback question. There is one of the big four quarterbacks is still kind of sitting out there at the top of the second round. Do they make a move there? I don't know. They're now the team that I'm kind of watching most closely on Friday night, just to see if this trend continues.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
I just want to say with the Lions real quick before we move on. They signed David Montgomery, re-signed Alex Anzalone to significant money for free agents. And obviously Anzalone is a guy that they know well and who's been in the building. But the reason the union wants free agency before the draft is so that you can't just get your needs filled in the draft and then not sign the free agents, right? So you're not actually supposed to do this. You're not actually supposed to go out and sign guys and then just get the same needs met like a month later. So I just, again, I don't love the way that they went about this. I love Campbell as a player. I'm sure Gibbs, listen, I remember when he played against Miami when he was at Georgia Tech. That was a nightmare. We had Manny Diaz, the defensive coordinator. He had no idea what the hell was going on. And so, Miami hasn't been able to stop the run in a decade. So that was an absolute nightmare. But still, I didn't see like nailed on top 20 pick from Gibbs. I just don't think that's the way the NFL works anymore. I'm happy that they're happy. I love this for them. I'm glad that they're high-fiving. But I just, if I was a Lions fan right now, I wouldn't be all that happy. Who helped themselves that we haven't brought up yet, Lindsay?
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about the teams at the very top that added a lot of picks in Houston and Arizona. I mean, that was the most exciting part of the draft because obviously Bryce Young goes number one, not a lot of drama there. And then all of a sudden at 2 and 3, there's a ton of movement with Houston taking CJ Stroud and then trading back up to number 3, trading with Arizona, giving up a lot in that trade with Arizona to take Will Anderson Jr., who, you know, look, Danny Kelly was like high-fiving all over the place in our Ringer office because, you know, two of his three top players, you know, his board fell very similar to his big board. He didn't love the Will Anderson pick for value. And that's the question here is you have two very desperate teams, two teams that probably have the worst rosters in the NFL in Houston and Arizona, who made some of the biggest moves of the night. You know, Arizona traded back up 3 and then they traded back up to 6. They got an extra first rounder from Houston in next year's draft in that move when Houston moved up to 3. Houston is still going to be bad. You know, I think Houston got two very, very good players in CJ Stroud and Will Anderson, but that roster is bad. This is a long-term rebuild. Houston has been telling us that it is a long-term rebuild in the type of contract that they gave to D'Amico Ryans, in the free agent contracts that they gave out, with the exception basically of Larry Mutunzel. They were not signing big long-term free agent contracts. Arizona could have two top 5 picks next year without having to do any trading. They could have two top 3 picks. I mean, Houston is probably going to be a very bad team next year. So, you know, I didn't expect to be talking about Arizona as a team that I liked what they did, because in general, Arizona likes to mess things up in every possible way. And look, they embarrassed themselves enough Thursday night when they had to swap picks with the Eagles for tampering with Jonathan Gannon, when they improperly called Jonathan Gannon, but nobody else was out trying to hire Jonathan Gannon the week after the NFC Championship game. You know, so that was embarrassment enough. That was the Cardinals.
What the hell was that?
Like, did Monty Asenford just like...
Monty Asenford just panicked and was like, I have to have Jonathan Gannon. I have to have Jonathan Gannon. I'm sorry.
He watched the NFC Championship game.
I'm going to call him.
He watched the NFC Championship game. Was like, I got to have that guy that shut down one-armed Brock Purdy and Josh Johnson. That is my coach. You know, I would have said, like, maybe let's see what he does against Patrick Mahomes first. But, you know, that's just me.
I don't love, if I'm Houston, I would have tried to be bad again and roll it over to next year. Yeah. Question for you. What happens if Arizona gets a top 2 pick next year?
They get rid of Kyler Murray and take a quarterback?
Not out of the question if it's Caleb Williams or if they really like Drake May. He's not going to play this season. I think we all, or he's going to kind of show up at the end of it. I'm just saying it's something to consider because I was thinking this morning, because Houston's out, who are the Drake May, Caleb Williams teams next year? Arizona firmly in that mix. I'm trying to think of the teams that'll be real bad. Atlanta is probably going to be real bad. I mean, I guess Bijan Robinson is, they think maybe he's a final piece of that offense, but I think they've got a ways to go. Is Tennessee in the mix to be a Caleb Williams, Drake May team, taking an offensive tackle, not solving the quarterback thing? I'm just saying. Who else in that mix? The Commanders are probably in that mix with Sam Howell.
Very much so. They're very much in that mix.
Just saying. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers would be in that mix. I think he can put them firmly in that mix. I'm intrigued to see.
They're going
to
be
Baltimore Ravens.
Huge winners.
So they're skill guys now. Odell Beckham, Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman. Last year, the end of the season, Barnwell pointed this out, DeMarcus Robinson, Devin Duvernay, DeSean Jackson. Now they've upgraded that significantly. They have Lamar Jackson under contract. Shout out to Jalen Hurts for basically establishing a sort of structure and a market and seeing what that looks like. You know, I think that we tend to write off teams too early in the NFL. And we tend to say, oh, well, they missed their window, blah, blah, blah. Like the Ravens still have a good infrastructure. They still have a good roster. They still have a good coach. With Todd Monken, their offensive coordinator, they're going to get better on offense. They're going to have a better vision on offense from the last couple of years. I don't know. Starting to like this Baltimore team.
Yeah, I mean, look, Lamar Jackson happy and healthy, which healthy is going to be, you know, a big caveat because they're a very different team when he is not playing than when he is. They have to be a contender, right? I mean, the AFC, as we've said over and over and over again, is a gauntlet. And there are going to be several good quarterbacks who are not going to make the playoffs just from a sheer numbers game. Only seven AFC teams are going to make the playoffs. But with Lamar Jackson, the Ravens are going to be in every single game that they play. And that's why I think it wasn't like an earth-shattering contract, right? Like the Lamar Jackson deal, like I'm really happy for him. He's now the highest paid player in annual salary. He surpassed the guarantees that Jalen Hurts got. Obviously didn't get the full guarantees that Deshaun Watson got. It looks very, very much now like that was an outlier deal. We'll see what Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow are able to negotiate when they get their extensions, probably in the not too distant future. So it wasn't like this, oh my God, like eye-popping contract, like, oh my God. But it's just, it was a really nice deal. It was a nice compromise. It's really good to just have that solved, right? If you're Baltimore, if you're mm-hmm. a Ravens fan, now if you're Burrow and Herbert, to kind of know where the quarterback market is exactly. But that was like the biggest news of the draft, right? Was that it was Lamar Jackson getting set and making the Ravens firmly back in that AFC contender pool.
And not sending the Ravens into a complete tailspin, which is what happens when you don't have a quarterback. So, yeah, they win. They got the best player of Thursday. It's Lamar Jackson, and they have him cost-controlled. And, you know, I really don't want to do the quarterback value thing, but quarterback salaries are exploding. I saw a stat the other day. The cap rose by 85% over the past decade, I guess you could say. And quarterback contracts have risen 150%. So that's a lot, and it's almost double what the cap is rising. But that tends to ebb and flow. If you look at some of the charts of quarterback salaries versus the cap, it's not a million miles away from the percentage of the cap that was spent on Troy Aikman in 1994. So I think sometimes when the TV money spikes, or quarterbacks are always at the beginning of the curve, right? And so when you're negotiating a quarterback contract, the agents are going to bake in the rise in cap with that. And this is just one of those times where there was a COVID kind of flattening of the cap, but we're still seeing those quarterback salaries go because the cap is going to start exploding. And then after a while, that's when you get the defensive ends making the money, the wide receivers making the money. Speaking of, I just want to throw this out there. I don't want to make it a 5-minute segment. I actually don't love the Jordan Addison pick to Minnesota to get the fourth receiver in a four receiver run at the end of the first round in a not deep receiver market already. I would have waited on that if I'm Minnesota and figured out other needs. I loved Smith pick for Dallas. I just think there's a lot of athleticism there. Dan Quinn will figure out kind of what to do. I saw some rumblings that he played in a stance that didn't heighten his athleticism in Michigan, and maybe Dan Quinn can unlock some stuff. As you know, my philosophy is just take the athlete and coach him up. Miles Murphy to Cincinnati, I quite liked. And then this is the last one I want to shout out here. I think the Patriots really helped themselves with Christian Gonzalez.
Yep.
One of my favorite cornerbacks in the draft, if not my favorite. We know what the Patriots want to do. They want to be able to play man, but then just be able to do everything. Christian Gonzalez is that kind of guy where he basically can do whatever Bill Belichick wants him to do. And that unlocks a lot from that defense.
If there's one thing that I trust Bill Belichick to do, it's to evaluate and identify and develop cornerbacks. Every year he seems to find one guy and it's a need for them.
And then one undrafted guy.
Usually it's a guy that you've never heard of, but, and look, they got really good value there. They traded back a few spots, a guy that they probably would have taken at 14, they were able to get at 17, and there's nothing that, that Bill Belichick likes more than accumulating fourth round picks.
Tom Brady runs the Dolphins.
It's a secret. There's nothing more that he likes than accumulating, fourth round picks. So I still think that they have some, big questions at their skill position. Who are they? Like, where are their explosive offensive players? Where are their really good pass catchers? Will Mac Jones and Bill Belichick ever actually get along? If they were a team that you were wondering, okay, could they make a move for a quarterback? Would they be interested in Will Levis? Clearly they were not. But I really liked that. Can we talk about Will Levis for just one sec before we...
I was actually going to tee you up on that.
So the Will Levis thing last night, I mean, it just got me, this is a little like inside baseball or whatever, but it got me really interested in the draft industrial complex and the media's role in all of this, because now this is the second year in a row where there was, a lot of hype right before the draft about, oh, these quarterbacks go in the first round. I mean, last year it was like, oh my God, Malik Willis, could Malik Willis sneak into the first round? And what about Desmond Ridder? And then, it was just Kenny Pickett and those guys, really, really fell into, later into Friday. The Will Levis thing made a lot more sense to me when I believe it was ESPN. It was Susie Colbert. They cut to her and she said that she had just talked to Will Levis's agent, Jimmy Sexton. And I had like light bulbs going off when he said, I said, okay. So you kind of start thinking, okay, this guy has one of the most powerful agents and well-connected agents in the NFL. He's also a guy who had been getting a lot of kind of like buzz in the mainstream media. Mainstream media buzz translates into draft industry buzz, because a lot of that comes from like, oh, well, if Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter and Peter Schrager and all of these guys are all of a sudden talking about a prospect, then that must be coming from the NFL teams. And so then all of a sudden these guys get inflated, then ESPN, it gets into a news cycle. And then all of a sudden this guy starts falling and we start seeing the reports that he has a mystery toe injury that we've never heard about. There's never been anything through the draft process about, oh, this is why he's falling. And it's just like, from a media perspective, I was watching that going, okay, yep, I see how all of this is working now. And, Will Levis, I don't know. Do we feel bad for Will Levis? He seemed to be okay.
I feel bad for anybody who didn't have their expectations met in life, right? Like everything, there's a lot of people where you have the expectation of something doesn't work out. How you manage that defines your life, right? That's actually the story of life, right? Having said that, so it sounds like Jimmy Sexton should have done a little better job managing expectations. I saw some folks saying that last night, that all of a sudden we're talking about top five, whatever. And like, it's funny because Drew Rosenhaus did the, Jalen Carter's not taking visits past 10 thing to set expectations, but he turned out to be correct. Whereas the Will Levis thing, he's rumored to go top five, he's rumored to go top two, he's rumored to go, to teams are going to trade up with Houston to get him at two, whatever. Didn't happen. Joe Banner, I saw on the timeline this morning, was theorizing that the toe was just sort of a excuse. I don't know. He saw some buzz on this. I don't know how great of an interviewer Will Levis was. I'm aggregating that from both media reports and some of the murmurs I've heard. But having said that, the problem he faced was this. Number one, bunch of teams didn't need quarterbacks. Number two is his market was toolsy guy who can be coached up. Here's your problem. Anthony Richardson was better at being that. He was better at being the toolsy guy who can be coached up. So he lost his edge. That's your problem. And then there's a bunch of teams. I already did this. There's a bunch of teams saying, are we a Drake May or Caleb Williams team? Because if we are, we don't need Will Levis. Will Levis's best shot at the top of the first round is a team, I don't know, like the damn Vikings, who are trying to think about a succession plan for their quarterback in the long term, the Jordan Love. I'd also say the thing about the Jordan Love thing. The Jordan Love thing destabilized a pretty good franchise. Like, you think teams are looking at that and being like, we want to do that. We want to do that. So it's really hard to have that succession plan. So there's just not that much of a robust market for him.
Dude, now that we're into the second round, is there a spot that you're watching and saying, okay, that might make sense? A team who, like the Vikings, who maybe could use a young guy, the Raiders, who aren't committed very long term to Jimmy Garoppolo, or Raiders. Just mentioned the Patriots, who have some questions about the Titans.
Hey, can I float one?
Sure.
At 36?
Sure.
Maybe they can't do this. Are we sure the Rams aren't in the market?
No. I mean, I don't think
Stafford's elbow doesn't work anymore.
They might not actually even have a backup quarterback under contract right now.
Right. But also Liam Cohen, who's back at Kentucky, but was their OC, has a lot of familiarity with Will Levis. He's played in the Shanahan system. Just throwing it out there. Top of the first round. This will change, by the way, because Tom Pelissero reported that there's a lot of movement there. Steelers, Cardinals, Lions, Colts, Rams, Seahawks, Raiders, Panthers. Saints, by the way. I don't think the Saints are in the market for it. I do think people were floating that last night. I think the Saints understand who they are and what they need. Titans at 41. Again, I really do think. I mean, you're getting in a, if you're going to be a team like the Titans, you need to be in a position where it is such a flyer that it's not a pain to take a guy first overall or second overall the next year. Like, you can't take a guy at 32, 33, 34, and then take a guy at one the next year at the quarterback position. I do think, obviously, you're going to have to do it if it falls that way, if you're going to do the Josh Rosen and the Kyler Murray thing, but you don't want to do it. But if you take a guy at 50, that's more palatable. So that's that. Lindsay, we're going to be back on Monday, pal.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
I'm excited. Thank you to Rick Jubozik for production help. We're going to do a full recap on Monday. This is just the first round recap. And then that's it. So we'll see you then, pal.
Have a good weekend.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.